My guest today is Preston Bennett. He's an expert on unidentified flying objects and unidentified submerged objects, and the author of several popular books. Would you give my readers some insight into what caused you to get interested in this field?
Well, actually, I grew up very skeptical of UFOs and pretty much everything paranormal. And it was in 1986 when I heard a report on the news of a sighting in Alaska. Didn't believe it for a second. I thought this guy, the pilot, he's hallucinating, he's hoaxing, misperceiving. I just didn't believe it, but I made the mistake of asking my family and friends what they thought of this ridiculous, you know, report. And that's when I got a real shock. I found out that my brother and his two friends had chased a UFO in their car across the valley here where I live. I found out that my sister-in-law and her two friends had seen three UFOs hovering over Van Nuys Air Force Reserve Base. They were just large orange globes of light. But then later that year, she actually had an encounter with what appears to be a typical gray-type ET. You know, described as short, large head, big eyes, pretty much your standard encounter with a gray-type ET.
Hmm.
And my other sister-in-law also was having encounters. And let me see, people at work, where I work, is a bookkeeper. I mentioned it there, and two people came up to me and started describing their encounters. And one of them had missing time. Actually, a UFO followed them home from the library, and they lost about an hour of time, which they could not account for. And I had another friend who had a missing time encounter as well. So it pretty much hit home for me, and that's how I got interested, and I started reading books, and pretty much started interviewing people right away, and writing about it, and one thing led to another, and pretty much now taken over my life. But I'm not complaining. I'm very, very much enjoying studying the subject. But once it gets a hold of you, it's hard to sort of extricate yourself from the subject.
Well, I know. I've been interested in it for probably a lot longer than you. I'm a lot older than you. It sounds like you live in a real hot spot.
You know, that I think perhaps that's true. And well, I know it is because California, it turns out, according to the National UFO Reporting Center, does have more encounters reported than any other state by at least twice as much.
Hmm.
I think Washington is second.
Wow. Tell us what other subjects you're interested in. I see that you've written several books on different subjects.
Yeah, it started with UFOs, but I started asking the witnesses, you know, has anything else strange happened to you, or, you know, have you had any other strange experiences? And a lot of them started telling me about ghost encounters. Now, I was skeptical of ghosts, too. Even though I actually had seen my mother's ghost after she died. This was in 1984. And I didn't believe it, even as I was watching her ghost. I just assumed I was hallucinating, even though, you know, I've never taken hallucinogenics and never hallucinated. But there she was in full color, a full-color apparition. And I just saw her for a few seconds, maybe 30 seconds at the most, before she faded away. And that was how it all sort of began. I found out that a lot of people were reporting ghosts, as well as, you know, other experiences like out-of-body experiences, dreams which come true, and just a whole wide variety of paranormal experiences. And I became intrigued. I knew these people were not lying. Some of these people are my, you know, family and friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, you know, you're a lot like me. I'm talking about your varied interest in different subjects. Do you feel there might be a connection between any of the subjects you're interested in?
I think that there is. What exactly is the connection? I'm not sure. I mean, because there are several cases I have where people have seen a UFO and then they'll suddenly have an outbreak of poltergeist activity. Or vice versa. So it seems to me that there is some sort of relationship between I've asked a lot of the witnesses what they thought, you know, why are they seeing ghosts as well as UFOs? And having all these, just a huge storm of paranormal experiences sometimes.
Well, you know, there's a theory on that. I don't know if you know about it, that there's something to do with the propulsion of UFOs that causes people to have hallucinations if they're in a certain area or there's a UFO above them. Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard that theory, but I've heard a lot of different theories.
Hmm. Do you believe that UFOs and USOs, that is, unidentified flying objects and unidentified submerged objects, are the same vehicles, and the only difference is that when a UFO goes into the water, it becomes a USO?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think these objects go in and out of the water quite easily, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And considering how vast our oceans are, I think we're just now becoming aware of how much they're using them as sort of a place to hide or to maneuver around and rest while they're not, you know, flying around in our skies.
Mm.
I think a lot of them are coming from, you know, various undersea bases, which may sound startling, but I really think that there is a lot of activity going on in our underwater areas, certainly off the coast of California here.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. I mean, I started receiving reports immediately when I started investigating back in 1986. And since then, it's just snowballed.
Mm.
And I've got probably over 100 reports of USOs right off the coast here in the Santa Catalina Channel. So I think there's something definitely going on there.
Mm. Well, I'm asking the next question because I have to wonder why we're so interesting to aliens if indeed they are observing us. What exactly do you believe about the capabilities of humans? Do you think that we have untapped resources and that maybe our brains are capable of far more than we suspect?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. I think that is probably one of the reasons ETs are so interested in us. You know, one of the things that kept me away from the whole field was the fact that the ETs look so much like humans. I mean, they've got eyes, nose, mouth, and, you know, two arms, two legs. They're basically humanoid, which I think raises a lot of questions about our own origins and our own identity of who we are and what our relationship is with these ETs. But I think that, yes, we do have great capabilities that we've only begun to tap, such as, you know, astral projection, levitation, teleportation, precognition. All of these are abilities that I think are actually natural human abilities, which are being waked up or ignited a lot by people who are having encounters. I think that's one of the theories, is, you know, one of the connections is why so many abductees or experiencers are also experiencing such a wide variety of paranormal experiences is because they've been woken up to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. I believe that the most definitive case for USOs is the Shea Garber case. Do you agree with that? And would you tell my readers about it?
Oh, the Shag Harbor case is incredible. That's a case where up in Canada, and that's where many, many people actually observed at least one UFO. I think there was two, which came swooping down and landed in the harbor and floated there and then actually sunk down. And the Navy came and did a big, long search for them and apparently did find them, though the object eventually moved away. It's an amazing case with support by not only witnesses, but by some government documents. And, it's a really incredible case.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that all of these UFOs are piloted by extraterrestrials?
No, I wouldn't be that presumptuous. And in fact, you know, I've had some military people, and I guess you would call them whistleblowers, come up to me and say that a large portion of the UFOs that we are seeing are, in fact, us piloting them. And I don't know how true that is. I think that's probably true around some military bases, like Edwards Air Force Base or, you know, other military bases. I think maybe 20% of the things people are seeing, maybe, in fact, our own. But for the most part, no. I think that they are piloted by extraterrestrials. Because, I mean, I just cannot imagine that our military is going to test pilot these craft by chasing cars down the road, landing in people's backyards, hovering over people's homes and lighting up the entire interior with these huge beams of light, and just putting on these gigantic displays over major city centers like Phoenix, Arizona, for example,
mm-hmm.
or Gulf Breeze or the Hudson Valley area or Topanga Canyon. I think that most of them aren't ETs inside, and I think that's supported by the fact that when people see these things land, humans are not what's getting out of them. It's these small, little, gray-type ETs, at least for the most part. I mean, I've talked to a number of people who've seen a wide variety of ET types, such as, you know, praying mantis. It's mostly the gray type
right.
that I've talked to, but you know, I get some people telling me they've seen humanoids, total human-looking ETs. So, I don't know. It gets complicated.
Yeah, right. There have been many different shapes of UFOs and USOs reported over the last 60 or 70 years or so. Do you think that this indicates that many different races are visiting the Earth?
Oh, God, that's a great question. It's one of the things that's really frustrated me with my research. Why are there so many different shapes of UFOs and USOs? Because, and you know, for that matter, ETs as well. I mean, don't have any reports really of people encountering one ET and one UFO, and then later people encountering the same ETs inside the same UFO.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of that. It seems almost as if we've got just all individuals, which doesn't make any sense to me. There's got to be some overlap in there. But there's very, very few cases for people, or different people in different areas, report seeing the same exact object. So I don't know what that means. I speculate that there is, you know, several races. I don't think it's necessarily hundreds, but it could be. And I guess the differences in ET craft are kind of like our own vehicles. You know, I mean, we have sports cars, we have SUVs, we have trucks and, you know, station wagons. I imagine it's a lot like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I'm just speculating at that point. So, you know, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, and it's very frustrating to me.
Have you ever seen or heard of a cylindrical USO being reported?
Cylindrical USO. You know, I'm sure there's one out there if you were to scan through the reports. But offhand, I can't say that I have.
I haven't either. I couldn't recall one.
That's interesting. I'm going to have to... See, now you're intriguing me. I'm going to have to go back to the reports and figure that out. But the USOs seem very much like the UFOs to me. I mean, these objects have been seen not only coming in and out of the water, but into solid land and out of solid land.
Mm-hmm.
One gentleman I spoke with, he was driving through Fresno in the desert with his friends when they saw what they thought was a 747 coming in to crash land in front of them on the highway. There was no other cars at the time when suddenly these two bright lights, that's what it looked like, came swooping down and actually turned and went into the ground. He said it appeared as if the ground opened up for a second, but he couldn't really tell. They just disappeared right into the ground.
Hmm.
So, and people have seen objects coming out of the ground as well.
Do you think that with these different types of craft, it could be that they're different races at different stages of technology?
That's entirely possible. In fact, you know, there was a wave of sightings in the 1890s called the airship wave,
mm-hmm.
and which didn't involve your typical high-tech UFOs with sleek, flying saucer shapes. These were instead very much like blimps. And even had like propellers and things like this. They gave off engine noises. And yet it appears that these were not humans. Certainly no one's ever come forward and said, no, I was responsible for these airship sightings. And yeah, it does seem that there's some technological differences in some of these UFOs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because some disappear very quickly. And again, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say. I mean, if we could study the crashed UFOs, like I'm sure our government does have, this would all be much clearer.
Right. Are you aware that the U.S. government has been experimenting with using helium in heavier-than-air craft? I bring this up because some believe that they have built a triangular craft that can cruise silently at low altitudes, and it may have a pulse jet engine for quick acceleration. And this fits the triangular craft sightings that have been reported all over the country. Do you think that the black triangular craft being reported could belong to the U.S. military?
I hesitate to say that yes, it could, because I think that it's very widespread. People have been seeing these triangular craft for years and years. And like over the Hudson Valley area, I find it hard to believe that our government would be testing these triangular craft and scaring basically the wits out of people. I mean, on the other hand, I have heard recently that we do have a stealth blimp. And so, you know, I know for a fact that we do have a lot of technology that is being suppressed or hidden, and that we do have these craft.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's my understanding that we are still having a lot of trouble reverse engineering these craft, and that there are some craft we can't even open and get inside that we're in possession of, or that we still have not learned how to fly them into outer space, though that we can fly them to a certain extent. This is all, you know, secondhand information.
Right, right. Why do you think that we are experiencing so many UFO sightings lately?
You know, I think there is an escalation of this phenomena. And if you go back in history, through all the records and all the historical records, you don't have anything like we're experiencing now. It seems it really exploded in the 1940s, pretty much coinciding exactly with the atomic age. And I think that's the real connection. That's why there's so much activity in modern times, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 40s even, back then we had only really distant sightings. And in the 50s, these UFOs started landing, and we had radar return reports, and we started seeing humanoids. And in the 60s and the 70s, these abduction reports started pouring in like crazy. And it really became apparent that that was sort of the central focus of a lot of this ET visitation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just continued on to the 80s and 90s, and now we're seeing these large sightings over major city centers. And as I mentioned, like Gulf Breeze, Hudson Valley, Phoenix, Arizona, Belgium had a huge wave. And these are all pretty recent waves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the ET activity is escalating. I think that they're putting on what pretty much amounts to a publicity campaign. They're trying to be noticed, but they're trying to announce their presence, so to speak, without actually landing on the White House lawn. Which they practically did.
That's right.
In the 1950s, twice. And what did we do? We chased after them with jets, and you know, we shot at them, and we basically had a very hostile reaction. So I think it's our own prejudices that is what is keeping us from having open official contact.
Well, you know, some people say that the reason they're so interested in us is not only because of the atomic age, but because of the computer age. And they believe that we, as humans, are about to improve ourselves.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that, but there's a lot of evidence. In fact, a lot of the technology we have, particularly with computers, did come from UFO crashes like Roswell, at least according to Colonel Corso, whose reputation is pretty much impeccable, and several other people.
Well, a lot of people don't agree with his book, I have to tell you.
It was one of the few best-selling books, and I do agree with it. I think it's corroborated by a lot of other people who are now coming out of the woodwork saying very much the same thing.
A lot of people think that Texas Instruments invented the processor, you know, the CPU.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't say for sure, but I found the book very impressive, really, and I don't think that it's got anything in it that is, you know, going against what a lot of other people are saying.
No, one of the reasons that people are not crazy about the book was it doesn't have very many references in the back.
Right, right. And it's a shame that he wrote it so late in life.
Yeah.
because, but as I said, you know, a lot of people are saying that type of thing, and I think the evidence that we do have these crashed UFOs is pretty good.
And
not only from the stories coming out of Area 51, but pretty much every state has some stories of crashed UFO activity or military cover-up.
Well, do you believe that there have been alien abductions of humans?
Alien abductions of humans? Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I was very skeptical of that, getting into UFO research. I mean, it's one thing to see a UFO, another thing to claim to have been taken on board.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a quote from J. Allen Hynek, who, as I'm sure you know, is the father of modern ufology.
Right. Uh-huh.
And he apparently told someone else that 1 in 40 people have been abducted or taken on board a UFO. I thought to myself, well, no. That's way too high, way too high. And then I thought, well, you know, I know 40 people. I must have, you know, at least 40 people within my circle of family, friends, and coworkers. And this is when I started researching. I asked everyone I knew, you know, slipped in that question, what do you think of UFOs? And have you had any unusual experiences with them? And I got a lot of strange looks and a few, you know, skeptical laughs. But one by one, these people started coming forward and telling me of these incredible encounters. And I didn't have to ask 40 people, actually. I asked less than that. And I found 5 people who pretty much fit the exact pattern of an abductee or claims to have actually been taken on board. So I think it's actually, yeah, pretty common.
Dr. Roger Lear, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
I am, yeah.
Okay, he's removed some objects from people that were embedded in their bodies. And when they were found, they had not only attached themselves to nerves, but they were not rejected by the body. Do you think that some people have been tagged, you know, like we tag wild animals to study their habits?
Absolutely, yes. I think what he's doing is remarkable pioneering research, and I'm glad that there's some other people doing it now. I've talked to many people who claim to have been taken on board and undergone what they felt was an implant procedure. And in many cases, they could point to a scar or some sort of object, and these things are appearing actually on MRI scans and on x-rays. And it's remarkable evidence, actually. And, you know, people always ask me, well, what are these implants for? Are they for mind control? Are they tracking us like animals? And I have to say, well, yeah, probably to a certain extent there is some of that. But I have talked to abductees who were told by the ETs what the purpose for their implants were. And one lady, she told me that the ETs told her that the implant was to measure the level of pollution in her body, because there's so many toxic elements going on in our atmosphere and in our water that they're very concerned about what we're doing to our bodies, that they're measuring our level of pollution using these things. Another person was told that it was to boost her immune system. So I think that's important to say, because there are positive reasons for some of these alleged implants.
Some scientists now believe that the sun and the planets might be as much as 4 times older than we have suspected. What do you think?
You know, I don't know about that. I do know that our science is incomplete. We speculate that humans originated on this planet, the modern humans, some 40,000 years ago. But then there's talk, the tales of Atlantis, and, you know, in ancient Egypt, India, they had vimanas, or flying machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that the ETs look so much like us raises serious questions about human origins and exactly how old the human race is. And some abductees have been told by the ETs that we are very much related to them, and that one day we will look like them, or that we are, in fact, of the same genetic stock.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think that probably as time goes on and as science improves, we're going to find out that our planet is, in fact, much older.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you think that's true, do you think that they could have been other races on Earth, and maybe some are still here and either using bases inside the Earth or under the ocean?
That is one of the theories. You know, it does seem hard to believe that some of these ETs would fly hundreds of light years or whatever it is from another star system to come down and, you know, abduct someone or just shine down a beam of light on them and go away.
Well, how about this? this is going to sound crazy, I guess, but if the Earth is proven to be much older than we thought, do you think it might be possible that some ETs might have descended from us and are coming back to check on us?
I think that that is entirely possible. The Pleiadians apparently say exactly that to Billy Meyer and to other so-called contactees of the Pleiadians. I think that's possible. I know that in Mount Shasta, there's reports of Lemurians, very tall humanoids. And, you know, there's a lot of reports, actually. And they allegedly come from, you know, inside the mountain of Mount Shasta, where they've resided for thousands of years, and they have lived on Earth for a long, long time. Supposedly the reptoid or reptilian-type ET also lives on our planet underground in vast caverns, and it turns out the Earth is much more hollow, I think, than people believe. Not that it's got a hollow center, but that our crust is pretty much riddled with caves and caverns, and certainly we've got a huge underground city across the United States under various military bases and things like this.
Do you believe the rumor that the United Nations held a meeting for 3 consecutive days in March on UFOs?
I hadn't heard about that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. You know, I think this subject is getting a lot of serious official attention. I think all the governments, you know, the major governments across the world are perfectly aware of what is going on. And we've seen a lot of steps towards disclosure. I mean, like France, for example, has released its UFO files. And Canada has made some amazing announcements in that regard. And I think we're really moving towards that here in the United States.
Well, I can tell you one other thing. A high-ranking Navy admiral has just resigned about a week ago. And it's said that he was forced to resign because he leaked this.
Wow. I wouldn't doubt it. We're in for some exciting times, I think.
Are UFOs a threat to the Earth?
Are UFOs a threat? Well, I'm going to say no, kind of reluctantly. Because, first of all, they've been around a long, long time. If they wanted to take over our planet, they could have. That's not to say that, you know, just because they haven't done so yet, that they won't. But I don't think the evidence shows any really, I mean, there's very little evidence that these ETs are evil in the, you know, definition of the word. We don't have people reporting being tortured in Nazi-like ways. Seems to me, for the most part, they're very much like scientists or tourists visiting our planet. And I don't think that they're going to take over. I think that they are interested in humanity. I think what we might see is sort of an official open contact. And perhaps they are creating a hybrid race. But you know what? There's reports of genetic manipulation going back a long time. And we could have a much closer involvement with these ETs than we even realize right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I don't think they're going to take over our planet. But on the other hand, I don't think that they're here to save us either. I mean, we wouldn't have AIDS and the ozone layer and people dying by millions of heart attacks and all these terrible diseases if they were here to help us.
There are all sorts of unexplained references to UFOs in ancient places. The temple at Abydos in Egypt shows wall illustrations of what appears to be a UFO, a helicopter, and a jet plane, yet the temple was built thousands of years ago. Right. What are your thoughts on this?
I think that it's accurate. I think UFOs have been visiting us for thousands of years. I spoke to a gentleman who's an Egyptologist, and he's actually able to read a lot of these hieroglyphics that no one else is able to read. And he discovered a manuscript that outlines a very major encounter in ancient Egypt in which hundreds of people saw this object in the sky. And some of these records from various places in Egypt are very extensive. and reach back quite a number of years, and describe your typical flying saucers. I mean, not only not, you know, manuscripts from Egypt, but as you mentioned, cave paintings,
mm-hmm.
and artifacts, and a lot of very suggestive stuff.
Some archaeologists say that the figures at Abydos are the results of things being carved or painted over many times, and the shapes are sheer coincidence. Do you think there's any possibility of this?
Absolutely. I mean, it's possible. But I think what you have to reach a point where at some point there's just so many of these reports that are so consistent that you have to really sort of step back and take a look at it and say, could this really be a coincidence? And there's pre-Columbian artifacts that look just like space shuttles. There's statues in Japan that look exactly like these ETs with large helmets and huge eyes. So it's cross-cultural. I mean, even Native Americans have legends of wise beings that come down from the sky and teach us agriculture and science and things like this. So it's pretty much all across the world, these stories going back into history.
There are people that believe that space aliens helped to build the pyramids, and this accounts for their uncanny accuracy of construction. What do you think about that?
Oh, God. That's one thing I just don't know, because there's been a lot of speculation on how these have been built. And apparently it is possible that they were built by humans using standard construction techniques. So I don't think there's a whole lot of evidence to say that these were built by ETs or any of the structures. On the other hand, though, I think that they may have been inspired by ET contact, because a lot of them do seem to have an astronomical context to them, in that they track, you know, the solstices and things like this, or point to various star systems. But as far as them being actually ET constructed, I'm not willing to say that yes, they are, until we have more evidence.
Okay. Richard Hoagland and Michael Barra wrote a book called Dark Mission. It stated that there are all sorts of ruins on the moon and Mars. What do you think about that?
I'm convinced that they're correct, and I'll tell you why. It's because I started doing some research on that when I was approached by a gentleman who claimed to be a photographer on the ship that picked up the astronauts. And he worked, you know, in the Navy for like 3 years. I believe it was from 1969 to 1971. And he said that he was the first person, actually, who saw these astronauts. He was dropped down with them, and, you know, in the capsule to take pictures, right close-ups, right in quarantine, right through the whole process. And it was his job to develop the photographs that they took. And he says that not only did the astronauts come back in virtual shock, babbling about all these structures that were on the moon, but he saw the photographs as well. And he said the photographs clearly showed crashed UFOs and alien bases that were, in fact, still in operation. And he went on and on about this. And I interviewed him for a long time, and not knowing much about this. So after I interviewed him, I thought, well, I wonder if there's any evidence to support this. And so I started looking into it, and I got a real shock. Apparently, there has been strange activity on the moon for, you know, hundreds of years. Great upstanding astronomers like Herschel. He saw unexplained lights on the moon. In fact, there's these lights on the moon that are so common that they're given the name transient lunar phenomena, or TLP. And scientists thought perhaps this was volcanic, but the moon's supposedly volcanically dead. And some of these lights appear in various patterns. And it's not only lights, there's structures. Now there's a number of books out, like We Found Alien Bases on the Moon by Fred Steckling, I believe, and George Leonard's book, Somebody Else is on the Moon, and a lot of other people are, you know, astronomers, amateur astronomers and professional, are reporting seeing these weird things on the moon. So, and I've seen some of the photographs that have been allegedly snuck out and taken by NASA and snuck out. Richard Hoagland has shown a few of these, like of the shard.
Yeah, they're in his book, in the Dark Mission book. There's a lot of them.
So yeah, I'm convinced because I've talked to people firsthand, and I look at that moon and I'm like, wow, there was a cover-up. There's ever since we went to the moon, pretty much the first time we started having a lot of questions about what we were being told and what was being covered up, and people have taken that so far as to say, did we actually even go to the moon at all?
Right.
I'm sure we did go to the moon. Maurice Chatelain, he was one of the guys who was in NASA, he said that we were followed to and from the moon by ET craft, which this gentleman I spoke with said that yes, that was true, and that it's common knowledge in NASA. So yes, I think that ETs are keeping a very, very close watch on all our space travel.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you look at accounts of rocket launches, you'll find that an enormous number of them have UFO activity around them. So ETs are keeping a very close track on our technological progress, specifically in the area of space travel.
Mm-hmm. What part do you think that our government is playing in the UFO scenario?
They're neck deep in it, in whatever part they're playing. And this stretches back at least to the Roswell crash and probably earlier when they got hard evidence of it. I think that our top-level scientists are very aware of this, and in particular our military. Not so much our government is the presidents and the senators and things like this, but our generals are, and those types of people are the ones who I think are in control of the technology and the UFO situation. I think MJ-12, that group that there's so much controversy about, is true. I think it's pretty much the group that's been designated by our government to study this phenomena. And they're the ones who are responsible for the cover-up. And if there is a cover-up, the cover-up is easily demonstrable through the Freedom of Information Act and trying to get these documents, UFO documents, wrestled out of the government's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And John Greenwald's website, Black Vault, you just one visit there and you'll be convinced. There's no doubt that there is a cover-up. Our government is responsible. Governments across the world are covering this up. I think it's one of the most sensitive subjects on, today in terms of the military-industrial complex. So our government is so deeply involved with this. Some people say that they're responsible for the abductions. I don't think that that's true. I think the ETs are the ones who are doing the abductions. But whatever role they're playing, they are very, very interested in the subject. They take it very seriously and are taking every step they can to suppress the evidence and keep the cover-up going.
Mm. Well, I know that you have studied the USOs extensively. How do you think that they are able to withstand those tremendous pressures at the bottom of the ocean? Is it by mechanical means, or do you think that it's by some sort of force field?
I'm speculating at this point, but my guess is that it's a force field, that they've mastered the technology which allows them to move solid objects away from the hull of their craft. And for an example, the way UFO lights work, we have these beams of light coming out of UFOs. And these beams of light, people have been struck by them many, many times, and they can not only render you completely paralyzed, they can actually levitate you or move you through a solid object. And actually, other people have reported being healed of flesh wounds and various things by these beams of light. These are all different beams of light, of course. But my point is, the ETs have mastered the electromagnetic spectrum to a much larger degree than have we. So I think that that's what they're doing. That's how they're doing it. Is they are able to exert these force fields, which allow their craft to just dive right into the water without any force of impact, which allow their craft to move at right angles without any, crushing the people inside. And they don't actually accelerate and decelerate like our engines do with propellants. These objects go from standing perfectly still to moving thousands of miles per hour in a split second.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, the technology they have is very, very advanced. And they have the ability to go into our oceans, not only into our oceans, but they can fly up and out of our oceans and very easily and outdistance all of our fastest craft. This is not to say that they're infallible, because I think there is some evidence that we have actually shot down these craft using various weapons, you know, such as a particle beam weapon. But for the most part, they're so much more superior to us that they can travel through our skies with impunity. And we're so skeptical, in fact, that they have even more power to just move among the population, even.
Mm. There's a theory that there was a planet between Mars and Jupiter that had exploded.
Right.
And that is what created the asteroid belt. Some say that that's where life came from. Do you think that human life on this planet came from, say, an area there or from a different planet?
I don't know. You know, I do think that our history, as we know it, of the solar system and the Earth, is incomplete, and that certainly people have been told by the ETs that humans have been around a lot longer. And, you know, I don't know. I think that I'm one of the people who's convinced that ETs are biological species coming from other planets. And I'm also convinced that they're abducting humans. I'm convinced that they're taking our eggs and our sperm and are actually creating not only hybrids, but possibly even other human beings. And so it's my guess that human beings are spread throughout the universe. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to find humans on other planets that know nothing about Earth.
Do you think that the Betty and Bonnie Hill case, where husband and wife were supposedly abducted, has now been proven beyond a doubt, since a map that was seen on the inside of the UFO has been matched to an exact area in space? I'm referring to the Fish map that was matched to Zeta Reticuli.
Right, by Marjorie Fish. Amazing. You know, it's certainly compelling evidence, isn't it? And that is a really remarkable case. I don't know if it's technically proven. It all depends on how open-minded you are and how skeptical you are. There are people who are so skeptical, they're not going to believe a UFO that's flying right over their head. And I'm totally serious about that. I've interviewed a family who had an encounter where a UFO followed their car. And they all described the same thing, this typical saucer-shaped object with colored lights around it, followed them home. The mother said, "Well, I don't believe in UFOs." And I'm like, "Well, what did you see?" And she described this. "Well, you know, it was an inverted saucer and it had lights around it, but I don't believe in UFOs." And she ended each of her sentences with, "I don't believe what I'm seeing," basically.
Yeah.
So people can be very skeptical.
Has anyone ever noticed, to your knowledge, a change in a UFO before it dove into the water and became a USO?
Not really. You know, what you do get is, like one gentleman described how a UFO, it was bright red and came blazing down out of the sky, and then as it came over the water, it turned bright blue. And my speculation with that is that it's changing the directional force of its engines, or that it has something to do with how they're propelling their craft, because there are a lot of reports of UFOs that change color as they accelerate or decelerate or hover in place. And but as far as changing right before it hits the water, not a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a number of reports, quite a number of them, of UFOs that do change shape. And one thing that I've learned, I think, just from interviewing so many people and reading about this, is that when it comes to UFOs, size doesn't really matter.
Right.
Because you can have this tiny little golf ball-sized object, just a little glowing light, which will suddenly expand and expand, and suddenly you have this giant saucer-shaped craft, or, you know, a triangular-shaped craft, which is expanded out of this tiny little ball of light. So these craft are able to change shape, and they can move interdimensionally. and I'm convinced that they can change size. One gentleman, he described to me how he was taken on board this huge triangular-shaped craft. He was laid out, he was examined, it was your typical abduction scenario. But he was able to converse with these guys. And he asked them, you know, my God, this ship, it's so big. You know, how big is this craft? And they laughed. The ETs actually laughed and said to him, we can make it any size we want.
Hmm.
And another gentleman I spoke to, he was abducted by these, I believe they were 9 or 12 foot tall, praying mantis type ETs. And he says, I'm not exaggerating, this is how tall they were. He's a 6 foot tall man. He says they were probably about twice his height. And he says, as he was on this craft, it would at times be very small, and the walls would be up close, and at other times the walls would be much farther away, and it was like he was in a huge auditorium.
Hmm.
So these craft are so much more advanced than we can even conceptualize.
Some people have insisted that extraterrestrials have already met with some of the governments of the world and that the U.S. is already working with aliens that have given them some technology. Now, what do you think about that?
I believe that that is probably true. Probably the classic example is what happened at Edwards Air Force Base in 1954, I believe, with President Eisenhower, who was supposedly coming to California to play golf and disappeared from the public eye for a period of several hours, at which point the press, who track his every move, went totally crazy trying to speculate where he was and what happened to him, and actually let out a press release that he had died. And that this press release was immediately withdrawn, and that it was supposedly just a dental emergency that President Eisenhower had disappeared because of.
Hmm.
But on the other hand, now there's more and more witnesses coming forth saying, no, that's not what happened at all. He was taken off to Edwards Air Force Base for an actual face-to-face meeting with live extraterrestrials who put on a display for him and many leading scientists, and actually took him into the craft, and for a little tour, they showed him how they can turn their craft invisible, and they said that they wanted to launch a campaign to sort of introduce spirituality and philosophy and this type of thing to humanity. And we wanted their technology. And they wanted to announce their presence, and we did not want them to for fear of how it would impact our economy, our religion, and, you know, basically humanity at large.
Mm-hmm.
And so they agreed, the ETs agreed to back off. And this is, you know, a remarkable story, but it's gotten a lot of corroboration throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
And almost immediately after it happened, there were rumors that it was going on. But now there's dozens of people who have stepped forward saying that, yes, it's true.
Mm-hmm. And looking at some of the new aircraft that this country has shown, do you think that any of the stuff that we are allowed to see may have alien technology used in the design of it?
You know, I have heard that the Aurora and the stealth aircraft are partially have some ET technology used in them. And it's interesting because, you know, the Roswell craft was supposedly not saucer-shaped, but in fact looked a lot more like a delta wing, kind of like the stealth aircraft. And I've heard reports of that. And certainly I think our aviation technology has grown at such a prodigious rate, I mean, just so quickly, so fast, that you have to wonder, where did they get, you know, all this technology suddenly? Are we really that smart to go from, you know, not flying at all to landing on the moon in 100 years? Or less, actually.
Do you think that that if a craft came from a different dimension, that all of our physical laws might not apply to it, and maybe this is how they're able to do some of the things that they do?
I don't know. You know, I wonder about that. You know, there's a phenomenon called doorway amnesia, and that is when someone is taken on board a UFO, they almost never remember actually stepping inside. they go through some sort of weird amnesia. And I'm wondering, you know, maybe it's because these craft are interdimensional and we're stepping into another dimension. And that is why people are reporting, you know, levitating and all this weird stuff. But on the other hand, I think that humans are interdimensional ourselves. I mean, we have a soul. We can have out-of-body experiences. We go to another dimension when we die. And, in fact, we don't even have to wait to die to visit these other dimensions. I think the ETs are so advanced that they've pretty much are aware of these other dimensions and are able to use their ships to fly through them or, you know, master the technology that's available in these other dimensions.
During a solar eclipse, many hundreds of UFOs become visible for a short time. Do you think that our skies are really full of UFOs, but we can't normally see them?
I do. I think that they are flying around in large, very large numbers. The National UFO Reporting Center receives upwards of, you know, 10 sightings every week, or every day, from California alone. So we're getting hundreds of thousands of reports coming in at a constant rate. So these craft are all over the place. They're not being seen in large numbers like our airplanes are, but I do think that they're there. There's a lot of evidence that they can turn invisible at will. And, you know, it's interesting. I've seen a number of objects myself, not until I started investigating it. And almost always it's when I'm associating closely with other abductees and things like this. And there was this one guy who was having major experiences, and he told me he developed a technique whereby anyone can see a UFO, and that's by blocking up the disk of the sun and looking at the corona, where there's very, very high light levels. And I use his technique, which is kind of bizarre, but it works, and you can actually see these craft flitting around. And it looks a lot like dust balls or insects at first, but if you persist, you'll start to see stuff that looks like V-shaped craft scooting across the sky. And on one occasion, I was doing this technique, and I saw a very large craft. It covered a good portion of the sky. It was gray. It was a perfect triangle. It had three round disks on the bottom, one in the front at the apex of the triangle and two at the rear. This was clearly a craft of some sort, and yet it was almost entirely invisible. You could just barely see it because it was the same color of the sky. And you could only see it for a few moments before it went off at like a 45-degree angle where it disappeared. But wow, it convinced me. I ran home and I wrote down exactly what I saw. So I think that there are a lot of these craft flying around that we're not seeing.
More and more pilots are coming forward and reporting UFO sightings. Do you think that a time will ultimately come when the government can no longer deny the existence of UFOs?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're edging close to that every day. Right now they're still covering it up, and as far as I know, there's still laws put into place forbidding military pilots and commercial pilots, for that matter, from reporting their UFOs encounters. And a lot of pilots have suffered because they've come forward and reported their sightings. But there, as you said, there's just so much activity going on. I think we're going to reach sort of a threshold where they can't cover up anymore. And I think we're really at that point right now, because although there is a cover-up, it is so loose. It's just falling apart. There are so many government whistleblowers coming out of the closet saying that they've seen this stuff. Dr. Stephen Greer, with his Disclosure Project, has gathered hundreds of high-level military and government officials who are totally willing to come out and speak about their encounters, and have. So our government they've painted themselves into a corner and are at a real tough spot right now where they're going to have to disclose, or people are going to lose all faith in them. And if they want to remain in power, our government, they're going to have to take steps to release the truth.
In my travels, I heard a rumor that at least a few people think that technological advancement on this planet was purposely slowed down. When we see how far the ancient Greeks and Chinese had gotten, it seems we should be a lot further ahead than we are now. What do you think?
Well, I do think that our technology has grown at a much too quick of a rate, and that's clearly, I mean, if you look at what we've done to our planet, that's clearly the case. Our overexpansion in of technology and our use of fossil fuels has destroyed our ozone layer. We're looking at a serious case of global warming, which I think is undeniable. The huge number of hurricanes and the tornadoes activity just this year alone is well above the average. So I think our technology has grown too quickly. Whether or not it's been suppressed by the or slowed down by the ETs, I don't know if that's true. But I do think the ETs are showing a huge interest in trying to spark our own interest in spirituality. And if Thomas Bullard, he's a folklorist who did a study, one of the first pioneering studies of UFO abductions, and he outlined the whole scenario of, you know, what happens when someone's taken on board. And apparently the most common thing that people experience when taken on board a UFO is physical examination. But what I find really interesting is the second most common experience is some sort of warnings of nuclear proliferation, environmental collapse, overpopulation warnings, and things like this. And in particular, human spirituality. There's a lot of talk about that with these ETs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how humans can learn how to do alternative healing methods. That's really common. I mean, it's hard for me to find an abductee now who hasn't had some experience with spiritual healing or out-of-body experiences or past lives or something like this.
Mm.
So I think the ETs are really interested in what makes us most human and are very interested in elevating us spiritually so that we can handle the technology that we're dealing with right now without blowing ourselves up to bits.
Do you think that the government will ever allow private companies to go to the moon or Mars if there are ancient ruins there?
Well, not voluntarily. I think it's going to be much more like the civil rights movement. It's going to be a war. It's going to happen, but it's going to take a lot of pressure, a lot of protests, a lot of energy, and a lot of work to end this cover-up, which it's going to have to eventually end because it just can't go on forever. And so eventually, yeah, I think that will happen. We've got now private companies allowing people to travel into space, and that's just around the corner. I mean, that's already in the works. There are planes being built where any private citizen can buy a ticket for $1 million and take a trip into outer space. So I think that, yes, it won't be long before people are being taken to the moon, but before that happens, we're going to have to see this Roswell UFO craft in a museum where everyone can see it, or the government is going to have to come clean to a certain extent.
Do you believe that if life exists elsewhere, that it has to be carbon-based, or do you think there's a possibility that we would not even recognize it if we saw it?
Well, it's a wide, wide universe. And I'd be very, very shocked if we were the only ones, for one thing. It seems to me genetics, the whole gene thing, is probably what life is built on across the universe, and that a lot of it is going to be carbon-based and very much like us in a lot of ways. But on the other hand, you know, this is one of the things that really kept me out of UFO research. Again, I was expecting ETs to have tentacles and, you know, just look so, so strange that we wouldn't even recognize them. But that's not the case. And whether you like it or not, we're kind of stuck with the stories of human-like ETs. So it seems to me that it's pretty much a universal pattern, this humanoid form.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to be encountering mostly. But, you know, we get all kinds.
I've talked to you for an hour. I don't want to take advantage of you. I do have a few more questions. Do you think you could go on a little longer?
Oh, sure. I'd love to.
Okay, great. Thanks. There are lines that cross the earth called ley lines that seem to cross in certain areas. In many of these areas, there are ancient ruins. Some say that this is a mysterious power. There is a mysterious power at these points that we don't yet understand. And UFOs have often been sighted in these areas. Do you believe that these areas do possess some secret power?
Well, I do think that that's probably the case. And as far as I know, the UFOs do use our own Earth's electromagnetic field in order to maneuver and power their ships. And not so much power them, but they use the field to drag their ships along. And in these areas, there are variations in the magnetic field, which is not uniform. Gravity is not uniform across our planet. There's lots of, you know, bubbles and weird differences. And these areas of ley lines do appear to have some sort of a vortex, if you will. Like Sedona, Arizona is another famous location for the supposed vortexes. And I think that there is a connection there. Certainly in the Hudson Valley area, there's a number of these ley lines which are connected to ancient ruins, which are connected to these major UFO encounters.
Right.
So we're still at the level of speculation here, but it's clear that there is some sort of connection there. And my guess is that there has something to do with the energy, yeah, that they can either use it. Maybe it makes them more visible and that they're being seen everywhere. Or maybe they're attracted to these areas because of the energy. I don't know. You know, it's hard to say.
There's now a theory that states that there is a dimension that all energy goes into and that it can be tapped to power things. Do you think that this might be where UFOs get their power from?
Right, the zero-point energy field. Right. I think that quantum physics is showing that there is this energy field that's present. And I do think that that's where the UFOs are getting powered from. In fact, there's this one guy I interviewed. He was an electronic specialist on a Navy ship. While he was on the ship, they had a major encounter. These lights were seen by many of the officers and many of the crewmen. And it was a very long encounter, though apparently just a sighting. But that evening, many of the crewmen, at least several of them, had this bizarre dreams where they were meeting with these apparent ETs. And the gentleman I interviewed said that in his dream, he calls it a dream, he was being told, you know, the ETs were very interested in the power sources of this ship, and they were very interested in why we had chosen, you know, fossil fuels. And the guy said, well, that's what we had available, that's what we learned how to do. And the ETs in his dream told him, well, you know, there are many other power sources available. You just haven't looked into it. If you look into nature and all this stuff, there are power sources that are basically free energy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of, this is something that turns up again and again. It's a strong theme in UFO reports where people are taken on board, they're shown the craft, shown the engine room, and basically told how this craft works. And in case after case, it's some sort of electromagnetic machine that allows people to use the energy that's available and free.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have all these abductees coming back from their experiences trying to build these engines. Like Whitley Strieber, for example, did something very similar to this. And he uncovered a number of reports, and there are a lot of reports like this. Jacques Vallée uncovered reports like this, where people are trying to build free energy machines afterwards. And this gentleman I spoke with actually did the same exact thing. And he went and did it. He went to the hardware store and got, you know, a bicycle wheel and all this weird technology. And he put it together and how the ETs told him how to do it. And he created this motor, which he says is not free energy machine, but it turns and turns and turns for days on end with very, very little energy.
Are you familiar with John Hutchinson?
The name sounds familiar.
I interviewed him. He's a Canadian inventor that claims to be able to tap into that area of free energy.
Right, yeah.
And he's got the videos that you can look at where he's actually raising things off the ground and different things.
Right. I've actually seen that now that you mention it. Yeah, I think we're right on the verge of discovering this. In fact, you know, I think we already have discovered it, and there's a lot of inventors who have, you know, stumbled across this sort of thing and had their technology gobbled up by our government. And, I mean, if you, there's a video out, Who Killed the Electric Car?
Right, I know. I saw that.
That perfect shows perfectly how our technology is being suppressed by our own government. And, yes, I think we have this technology. And the oil companies are keeping it suppressed.
That's right.
And it's all going to come out, though. I mean, it better, or we're all going to die in a horrible death at our own hands.
Some people say that many UFOs are not piloted by extraterrestrials at all, but time travelers.
Right.
Do you think that's possible, given that any tiny change that is made now would affect the future?
You know, time travel, it's very problematic, as you say, and I don't think we understand it, but I've talked to a number of people who swear up and down that these ETs can time travel. One lady I spoke with, she's an abductee, has had an enormous number of experiences, and can back it up with witnesses, hundreds of witnesses, really. And she, in fact, showed me the UFOs herself. I'm convinced her case is legitimate. And she said she had an experience in Georgia where she was in a very severe car accident. And the ETs came and abducted her at the scene of the accident and fixed up a lot of her injuries and placed her back in this, at the scene of the accident.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she was back at the scene of the accident instantly after it happened, and she later asked them how they did that, and they said, well, we just time-traveled. They told her that you had actually died in that accident, and that we came down and we revived you, we repaired as many of your injuries as we were karmically allowed to do, and placed you back. And so I think time travel is possible. Another gentleman I spoke with says that he was abducted off of a Navy ship. And go figure, I mean, this UFO appeared overhead. No one else could apparently see it. Next thing you know, he's inside of this craft. And it took him back into time and showed him his childhood, showed him various things in his home, which were years past, years had gone by, and yet it appeared to be live. And not only that, it showed him the future as well.
Mm-hmm.
These ETs told him that since we exploded the atomic bombs, we started a countdown clock. And he says, I don't know exactly what that means, but it has something to do with upcoming disasters. Because they showed him various disasters that would occur. And they said he said it was mostly hurricanes and landslides and floods and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I haven't seen a lot of that happen yet. But he says some of the disasters have happened, and so he's convinced mm-hmm. that it is real. So I think, yeah, ETs can time travel.
Well, some people now say that we can time travel, too, and it's not dangerous for us now to go into the future, as long as we don't go into the past. What do you think of that?
You know, I don't know. I could only speculate at this point, but I find the whole subject really fascinating, and I know a number of people have been told by the ETs that we will look like them in the future, and that some ETs are apparently time travelers who have come back from the future to visit their ancestors, and this would certainly explain why they're so similar to us in a lot of ways. But I don't know.
Many people go missing every year from the Earth, never to be seen again.
Right, right.
Do you think that extraterrestrials are kidnapping people?
You know, I think that there is some of that going on. I do know of a few cases where people have, like there's a case in New Mexico, in which a farmer was returning home when a UFO came swooping down out of the sky, and everyone was watching it. His family was in his home, in their home, and he was pulling up in the driveway when this craft came right overhead, struck down a beam of light on him, lifted him and his pickup truck into the craft, abducting him, and taking him away, and he was never seen again. And this story was supposedly tried to be suppressed by government officials, but it came out through the research of Leonard Stringfield.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few cases like that, not a lot. I mean, there's several cases of pilots, actually, who have been seen flying towards these craft, and then these craft swallow them up and we never see them again. So there are cases like that, and there are a lot of missing people every year, a huge number, and way, way more than you would think would be responsible for runaways or murders or people, you know what I mean, just
right.
Normal reasons.
We stopped going to the moon before we even used up all of our Apollo rockets.
Right.
The excuse that was given was that the public was tired of the landings.
Hmm.
Do you think that this is the truth, or do you think we were warned not to go back, or do you suspect, as I do, that we have a second space program run by the Air Force that is far more advanced, as Gus Grissom said, and that we already have bases on the moon and maybe even Mars?
I think that you're correct, and I think that a lot of what we saw in the space program was more of a publicity stunt, so to speak. Certainly, people were not tired of us going to the moon. It was a very, very remarkable thing. I think we were, in fact, warned off as well, because it's my understanding that Apollo 13 was carrying an atomic device that was going to be used to explode on the surface of the moon to determine exactly how hollow it was, and that it wasn't an accidental explosion that, you know, stopped this experiment, but an attack by the ETs who had been monitoring the whole situation and basically told us that we're not going to allow you to do that, don't do that, we won't allow it. And we went ahead and tried to do it anyway. They stopped us.
Hmm.
And I have heard several times that we have been basically warned off from traveling into deep space. But on the other hand, I think that there is a lot of evidence that we do have a moon base and that it is operating. And I heard recently that we have not only a moon base, but a large artificial satellite, a type of a huge craft in which we're doing a lot of research.
I've heard that too, yes.
In outer space. And I think that we are working with the extraterrestrials. I do believe that that's true. And I think that the whole Cold War was sort of a farce, and we cooperated very much with the Soviets to get into space, and are still cooperating with a lot of these foreign powers at a very high level to research this phenomenon, this subject.
What is the one UFO or USO event that surprised you the most?
No, there's hundreds of thousands. That's such a hard question. The one that surprised me the most, I think the Roswell crash is hands down the biggest UFO event, and that we haven't seen the last of it yet. I think that's really going to be the seminal event that blows this cover up wide open. But what surprised me the most, honestly, is this event which occurred over Topanga Canyon, which is where I actually live, and at the time I did. I had just moved out of Topanga Canyon when this giant wave of sightings occurred from 1992 to 1994. And that surprised me because here was this huge wave of sightings happening directly in my neighborhood. And I don't know what the chances of something like that are to happen, but it really startled me and just surprised me. Just an amazing event.
It's been said that we already have the means to travel to the stars. Do you believe this?
I do. I do absolutely believe this. I think the evidence coming out of Area 51 alone is very convincing that we are flying this craft. And there are a number of people coming out saying that, oh yeah, we've traveled to the stars and stuff like this. But I'm still waiting for the proof, the evidence, because if it's true, you know, where are the photographs, where's the artifacts? So we don't have the proof yet, not in the public arena, at least.
Okay, at this point, I'd like you to say whatever you like.
Whatever I like. Okay, well.
Everybody always laughs when I say that.
I think that UFOs are real. And for anyone who's skeptical out there, get your head out of the sand and look around you. If you don't believe in these UFOs, my suggestion is to ask your friends and family and coworkers, people you trust. And I think you're going to get a real shock when you find out a lot of people are having these experiences and not talking about it. I do think open official contact is on its way. I think we're going to see it in our lifetime, if not tomorrow or the next year. I think it's right around the corner. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I think the government cover-up is also true. It's demonstrable. It's very easy to prove. And it's also ending. And I think we're at a very, very volatile time right now in which our government is losing all respect from the people because of their cover-up actions, and that we're going to see the end of the cover-up, and that we are going to see open official contacts. We're going to see ETs landing. I think all of this is going to come true in our lifetime, so I think it's time for people to start becoming prepared for this. I think this subject should be taught in schools. This is one thing that, this is why I'm so skeptical. I never heard a word of UFOs, not one word, in any of my classes all the way through college.
Well, neither did I.
So, and it's truly one of the most, you know, important subjects taking place today. And it's having a huge impact on our society, very pervasive in all levels of society. So it's a very, very important subject. It should be taken very seriously. People who claim to be abducted should not be ridiculed or laughed at. They should be very much, people should be much more open to what people are saying about this. Abductions, I believe, are taking place. I think they're very widespread, and I think that they hold a lot of answers to the ET agenda and why exactly they're here. And the last thing I'd want to say is that when it comes to ETs, are they hostile or are they benevolent? My answer is that they're very much like humanity. They're very much like people are. Their behavior falls under the normal spectrum of human behavior. We have some who are not so nice. We have some who are very nice. I've talked to people who've been taken on what amounts to a tour of the ship and taken on a trip through outer space and to visit various planets, including the moon. One gentleman told me that. So you get all kinds. ETs are very, very much like us, only different. And I think it's our own prejudices against people of different races, different skin color, of different beliefs and religion, that is preventing us from having open official contact. I think the ETs, by and large, are afraid to make contact because we will shoot at them. And we're now at the technological capability where it's almost a much more level playing field. I don't think ETs would be able to take over the planet as easily as, you know, say 50 years ago, because we do have the technology. So,
well,
we're in for some really exciting times at the very least.
Listen, I want to thank you very much. It was a very interesting interview.